morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio Show. Here's a quick announcement. Our April heart-centered and passion-driven Inspirations for Better Living digital magazine designed to help moms build a better future for themselves, their families, and loved ones will be live this weekend at inspirationsforbetterliving.com. April's theme is The Magic of Springtime. The magazine offers inspirational stories from our dedicated team of experts to help you navigate your current situation with confidence in your motherhood journey as the COO, if not the CEO, of your family. So please go to inspirationsforbetterliving.com to treat yourself to some engaging, entertaining, and enlightening stories. You deserve it. As for our radio show this morning, my guest for today is Robbie Kelman Baxter. Robbie is the founder of Peninsula Strategies, LLC, a consulting firm. She helps companies use subscription pricing, digital communities, and Freeman models to build deeper consumer relationships. For over 21 years, she has worked with over 100 organizations in 20 industries. Robbie has presented globally as a keynote speaker at major conferences, association meetings, trade shows, elite universities, and private audiences at many of the world's most well-known companies. She hosts the podcast Subscription Stories, where she interviews business leaders to discuss how they use subscription pricing and membership models to redefine the biggest industries and generate predictable recurring revenues. Robbie also developed and taught 9 video courses for LinkedIn Learning on business topics ranging from innovation to customer success and membership. Robbie's first book, The Membership Economy, Find Your Super Users, Master the Forever Transaction, and Build Recurring Revenues, was named one of Book Authority's top 10 marketing books of all time. Her second book, The Forever Transaction, walks readers through every step of the subscription business process. Robbie's received her MBA from the Stanford Graduate School of Business and graduated with honors from Harvard College. She was a strategy consultant at Booz Allen and Hamilton, a New York City Urban Fellow, and a Silicon Valley product marketer. As for our kitchen table conversation this morning, Robbie and I will be talking about her remarkable life's journey and how today's membership and subscription economy work for businesses and consumers. Happy Wednesday, Robbie. Welcome to From My Mom's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing today?
Doing great. And thank you so much for inviting me. I'm really delighted to be here today.
Wonderful. It is a pleasure to have you with me. Like our listeners, I'm excited to get to know you a little bit better and gain the inside story into the latest trends in today's membership and subscription economy. So let us get started by getting to know you a little bit better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Yeah, so I've lived in Northern California since I was 4 years old. My parents moved from the East Coast from Brooklyn, New York, looking for a better life, a healthier place to live where they could be outside more, where the weather was milder and where new things were happening. And so, I think I had a very privileged childhood. The sun was usually shining and my parents were quite entrepreneurial. And I was always taught that I could do and be whatever I wanted to if I worked really hard. I was young when I graduated from high school. So my parents told me I had to work. I had to do something for a year before I could go to college if I was going to go to college far away from home, which is what I wanted. So I went to Switzerland for a year. I learned German. I lived with a host family there. Had a got used to living away from home and living in a different culture before going to Harvard in Boston. So I could be really ready for that change. I studied English. I studied poetry. Another thing my parents taught me was if you go to a really outstanding liberal arts school, you can study whatever you want, and you will learn how to think and how to communicate and how to learn. And those skills will serve you well, whatever you choose to do. But you don't have to be pre-professional. You don't have to study, you know, pre-med, pre-law, computer science, something that's going to lead directly to a job. And so I studied poetry. I wrote a lot. And then I worked for the city of New York for 2 years. I was an urban fellow. I worked in economic development, helping keep good employers in the city and have them build, you know, great developments in blighted areas. And then I realized that was kind of I needed more skills to be successful professionally. So I went to business school. I worked a little bit as a consultant at Booz Allen Hamilton. It was a big consulting firm. And then I was a product manager, and I got laid off while I was on maternity leave. Actually, the day I came back from my maternity leave, I came running into my boss's office and said, "Hey, I'm back. I'm ready. What projects do you have for me?" And she said, "You know what? We're meeting at 11. You go do, you know, go say hello to your friends and you know, kind of set things up and catch up. And we'll meet at 11 and we'll get right to it." And when I came at 11, there was an HR person and they told me that I had lost my job. And at that point, with two small kids, I decided I was I needed to be in control of my own destiny. And I started consulting and I haven't looked back. I've been focused as a consultant for over 20 years. And most of that time, I think within 2 years, I was focused on subscription and membership models. And I've been studying, researching and working in the trenches with companies on subscriptions ever since.
Fantastic. That sounds really wonderful. It's an amazing journey in our lives, actually, when we look back. The up and downs and the exciting part, but what I detect is the fact that curiosity led you the way, so to speak. Got to be something else.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't know. I mean, so many young people don't know what they want to do. And, you know, my advice to them is always, well, you know, get a good grounding. Learn how to learn. You know, you don't have to. Like, I think that's very different. A lot of people think, you know, you gotta, you know, get that first job and focus on that. But for me, it's really all about learning how to learn, and that'll get you by.
Right. The fascinating thing, what I garner from the presentation you just made, is that there are basically two universities. One is that formal one that we all go to get the proper education, so to speak, right, for career, and it's fairly structured and so forth. And then the other thing is the university of life. And your parents kind of guided you enough to whereby, hey, go out there. Life is a buffet line. Figure it out.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But they definitely believed in traditional education too.
Don't get me wrong.
Absolutely. It's two parts. And I think that the thing that you're bringing up is it's the lifelong learning, right? It's always, you can always pick up new skills, always be curious, come into things with beginner's mind, right? My parents are now, you know, I just went on vacation with them. My parents are, you know, my mom's in her late 70s. My dad is in his early 80s. And, you know, they're still learning things, right? They're still asking questions and they're still trying new things. And I think that's so important.
So true. So when you were growing up, who were the major influences in your life?
I would say my parents and my sister. We, as I said, we moved away from all of our family. And it was just the four of us. And we had a pretty tight little... pretty tight little unit. And, you know, my dad, he's always been like a super hard worker and kind of street smart and creative and found his way, figured out a side door if the front door wasn't open. And my mom is just one of those people that is so confident that she can figure stuff out. You know, that's always great. And my sister is a really, really... I mean, my sister's a therapist. She's a psychologist, and she really understands people, and she's very gentle. And it was a really great kind of compliment to my, you know, my very aggressive, forward-moving parents. It was a very, very good place to grow up.
That's wonderful. Really is wonderful. So What got you into the world of business? I mean, there got to be something that sort of flavored you to whereby this is what I want to do versus something else, I guess, because you did do poetry and so forth, but then that's a big switch from the left to the right or right to the left, so to speak.
Funny, because my senior year of college, I, you know, they have recruiting and, you know, you go and interview with different companies, and I interviewed with this real estate development company. And one of the interviewers actually said to me, how do I know that you're not just going to sit in your office and look out the window and think about poems? And I was like, dude, you know, I know how to work hard. I understand that, you know, you're supposed to focus on whatever you're getting paid for. What a ridiculous, like, of course, at that time, I was, you know, 21 or 22. I said, oh, you know, Sarah, I'll really work hard, blah, blah, blah. But like in hindsight, I was like, that was such a rude question. I know how to learn and I'm going to figure this out. And it's not that hard. It's just real estate. I'm sure I can figure this out. But I, you know, you asked how I came to business. My dad was a lawyer and I had applied to law school, which is, you know, from being an English major, and I had applied to law school and I'd gotten in. And then I went and did this fellowship working for the city of New York. And I realized I had a bad feeling about being a lawyer because I think lawyers are paid to look for what can go wrong when everything seems like it's going right. So, you know, you get married, your lawyers say, here's what you need to worry about in case you get divorced, right? Mm-hmm. You start a company, lawyers say, make sure you have these contracts in place in case your business goes bankrupt, in case your partnership doesn't work out. And so I realized, like, I don't want to be always looking for the negative when everybody else in the room is excited about the positive and the possibility. Mm-hmm. And so that was what got me into business, was realizing I want to be on the other side of the table. And so I ended up, you know, withdrawing from law school before I got there, you know, forfeiting my deposit. And then I applied to business school and ended up going that route.
That's interesting, because everyone is young at any age. But at that particular time, that's a pivotal moment in some ways, right? Because that's a major shift.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, that's amazing. Why then marketing?
Well, you know, marketing is about understanding an audience and communicating to them, you know, figuring out who gets value from what you have, and then figuring out how to communicate that to them. And then it's also about communicating back to the people building products what they need to understand about that market. So that they can build better products. And so that role as translator, as communicator, with a little bit of, you know, positivity, sales, helping to kind of put yourself in someone else's shoes, that was very natural for me. I was always a person who liked to connect with people and, you know, was interested in what does it take to connect with this person versus that person. Personally, right, for friendships. And so that was very natural for me to kind of move into that professionally. It's never seemed, it's always seemed natural. It hasn't seemed hard or complicated. Like, it's very intuitive. It's always been intuitive, this idea of how do you build relationships with the people you serve.
Right, right. I've always tell people that, especially in business, for sure, and sometimes they tend to forget, we're in the people business. Commodities sell themselves to an extent, but in the people, people buy from people.
People buy from people, absolutely.
And so from that perspective, how did that marketing work evolve into a heart-centered and passion-driven mission in your work journey? Sounds like with your natural people skills and leadership tendencies, it just became a natural for you.
Yeah, I mean, for me, subscriptions, membership, my fifth, you know, I told you that I got laid off while I was on maternity leave. I went into consulting, and my fifth client, as an independent consultant, was Netflix. They're based out here near where I live. And, I came in to work with them on some partnership stuff. Mm-hmm. And I fell in love with their model because they were so focused on the relationship. They were focused on, you know, any kind of subscription, any kind of membership in order for it to work. you can't just focus on the moment of acquisition, you know, getting someone to buy it, getting someone to sign
right.
up. You have to focus on them getting ongoing value, or else they're going to cancel their subscription. So it's really about understanding what makes relationships work. And that's something, as I said, that was always very natural and very meaningful for me. So when I found this as a little niche for consulting that so naturally and organically aligned with how I look at the world and what I value, you know, I just kept digging deeper.
That's wonderful. So please tell us, what is membership and subscription economy? I mean, it's out there. We all are exposed to it. But then when I ask someone on the streets, everybody has a different take on it and sort of a good, bad, and ugly, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, so the term membership economy, which is what I called mm-hmm. my book, which is distinct from subscription economy, which is it's another term. So what I think about is subscription is a pricing decision, right? Mm-hmm. You commit to paying on a regular basis in exchange for access to a bundle of benefits. And that bundle of benefits might be a box with makeup in it. It might be access to a catalog of video content. It might be access to a software program or a mobile app. But you're committing to access in exchange for regular payments. It's a tactic. Subscriptions are a tactic. It's a pricing choice. Membership is a mindset. It's how you feel about the people you serve and the kind of commitment you're making to them. If you treat a customer like a member, you're in it for the long game. There's an expectation that they will have access to you on an ongoing basis. And, you know, if I buy a Lamborghini and I drive it off the showroom floor and I never take it out of first gear, right? I don't get the enjoyment. I don't get the wind in my hair. I don't get to drive fast. I don't get to feel what this baby can do out on the open road. That's my problem. I already bought the car. The Lamborghini company, they don't care, right? It's my problem. If I subscribe to that same car, it becomes important to that company that I am getting value every day, because if I'm not, even if it's my fault because I'm, you know, keeping the car in first gear, I'm going to return it. I'm going to cancel my membership. So membership is about the way the organization feels about the people they serve. And the membership economy is this massive transformation as organizations change their focus from a transactional economy. I got to sell this product. I got to move as much as I can at this mm-hmm. moment at the cash register to much more of a long-range relationship-oriented viewpoint.
Fascinating. That's really wonderful. Is one better than the other?
Well, I mean, as I said, subscription mm-hmm. is a tactic, right?
Yeah.
It's a tactic. It's how you price. It's not good. It's not bad. It's just a pricing choice. Membership is about a mindset. So they're very different things. And I think too many organizations think that subscription is a strategy, right? I'm gonna bundle some stuff together. I'm gonna plop some subscription pricing on it, and then I'm gonna cross my fingers and hope it works out. I don't think that works in a lot of cases. You really do need to start with the relationship that you're now committing to, and then design the products and services to align with that customer or that subscriber or that member's ongoing goal and communicate with them in an ongoing way. It really requires quite a transformation in how you think the way you take care of your customers.
Right, right. Personally, words have power, so for me, membership sounds a much closer connection versus subscription.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Because subscription, again, it's your thing, and like you say, the drive here is the bundle, and versus membership, all of a sudden, like, you're part of the family.
Right. I always think of it as, you know, what would happen if you gave everybody that, you know, every one of your members, your home phone number, like, mm-hmm. you know, a company I worked with, a car wash company, they have subscriptions. The CEO mm-hmm. of the car wash company, actually, when you sign up for membership, so you get, you know, mm-hmm. unlimited car washes at any of their venues. He actually has his phone number on the card, his mobile number. And it says, I'm the CEO of this company. If you have a problem, call me. Right. That's confidence, right?
That's
membership, right? I am here for you. And by the way, you can call. He says nobody, you know, very few people call, but mm-hmm. he said, you know, he wants people to know that he is with them on their journey to, you know, have their car always be, you know, clean and look good.
Right, right, right. That's fantastic. That's really wonderful. So what is the freemium concept? And is it a yesteryear model? Because we hear a lot about it several years ago. And so what's that all about?
So freemium is simply the idea that you have a subscription offering and there's a free option and a paid option. And freemium is free forever. It's mm-hmm. not a free trial, just to make sure people understand what we're talking about. I don't think it's going anywhere. It's a very powerful model. Most software companies use it. Many media companies use it, newspapers and magazines and the like. You know, if you, you know, like it, let's say you, you know, you are a paying subscriber to something, you get unlimited access. If you're a freemium subscriber, you might get, you know, 10 articles a month for free, or you might get a limited set of features. But if you're a premium member and you pay, then you get access to live customer care. The idea is that the two models work well together, the free and the premium, that they're both being used to build a more robust model. So a lot of times the free piece serves to introduce people to the offering, to establish mm-hmm. a new habit, a new way of doing something. Or in some cases, the reason that it's free for many people is because the people who are getting the product for free, the freemium members, are creating value either for the paid members, in which they are part of the product, it's often like a networked effect, or they're actually referring in new subscribers. So I'll give you an example. I bet a lot of our listeners are members of LinkedIn, mm-hmm. social network for professionals. Most of us don't pay for it. Most of us just, you know, put our resume there, connect with our professional associates there, maybe read the news content there. It's all free, tons and tons of value for free forever. We are freemium members. Some people pay a premium in order to get additional benefits. For example, LinkedIn has subscriptions for salespeople, for people looking for jobs, for recruiters. They get additional benefits that they pay for. If the rest of us, the free people, weren't there, there would be no product. We are the product. Our content is the product. So that's a really good example of a freemium business model that is alive and well and driving great value for shareholders.
That's fantastic. The interesting part of it is that all these are structured to benefit the company, because you're looking at how do we build something that is engaging, that people want to sign up and so forth. So were there at any given time, from a perspective of a consumer, am I getting everything that I need to get, or like you say, is an a la carte, so to speak?
There's nothing wrong with subscription. It's great. And the subscription mm-hmm. economy is alive and booming. We see all
yeah.
kinds of – all I'm saying is that if you have a membership mindset as an organization, let's say that you run a restaurant and you have a membership mindset. Many restaurants do. Many mom-and-pop, you know, restaurants, mm-hmm. you know, you come in, customer comes in, they're recognized, they're welcomed. I forgot my wallet. I forgot my phone. Can I pay you next time? Sure, because we're in it for the long haul. I trust you, right?
Right.
There's no subscription at that restaurant. There's no contractual payment process. But I treat you like a member because I know you're going to come back every Sunday with your family. That's a membership mindset. I could build in a subscription as a restaurant owner. I could say, you know what? To this family, right? You come every week anyway. Why don't we say you pay me $100 a month and you get, you know, free, you know, dinners up to, you know, every Sunday, 6 o'clock, I save you a table for two. And you can, you know, you can order any main course on the menu in exchange for your commitment, your formal commitment, right? So you can have subscription without a membership mindset. And you can have a membership mindset and not use subscription. The beauty comes, and a lot of organizations are doing it, when you align the two. And you are part of this membership economy, which gives you permission to ask for this contractual relationship with the customer where they're paying you every month. And it creates great value. A membership mindset creates great value for the consumer or for the business customer when it's done right. It's, there's many, many cases where people say, I love my subscription. I don't have to think about this problem anymore. I know it's going to be solved through my subscription.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. You're listening to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. I'm Johnny Tan, your host. Our podcasts are available on iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podtail, Play FM, TuneIn Radio, Mixcloud, Listen Notes, and Hophopper. Here's a quick reminder to treat yourself to our heart-centered and passion-driven Inspiration for Better Living digital magazine at inspirationsforbetterliving.com. April's theme is the magic of springtime. My guest for today is Robbie Kelman Baxter. Robbie is the founder of Peninsula Strategies, LLC, a consulting firm. She helps companies use subscription pricing, digital communities, and premium models to build deeper customer relationships. For over 21 years, she has worked with over 100 organizations in over 20 industries. Robbie has presented globally as a keynote speaker at major conferences, association meetings, trade shows, elite universities, and private audience at many of the world's most well-known companies. She hosts the podcast Subscription Stories, where she interviews business leaders to discuss how they use subscription pricing and membership models to redefine the biggest industry and generate predictable recurring revenues. Robbie also developed and taught 9 video courses for LinkedIn Learning on business topics ranging from innovations to customer success and membership. Robbie's first book, The Membership Economy, finds your super user, master the forever transaction, and build recurring revenues, was named one of Book Authority's top 10 marketing book of all times. Her second book, The Forever Transaction, walks readers through every step of the subscription business process. Robbie received her MBA from the Stanford Graduate School of Business and graduated with honors from Harvard College. She was a strategy consultant at Booz Allen and Hamilton, a New York City Urban Fellow, and a Silicon Valley product marketer. In our kitchen table conversation this morning, Robbie and I are talking about her remarkable life's journey and how today's membership and subscription economy works for businesses and consumers. Robbie, are these business models, the subscription and membership models, approach the way to go for all businesses, large and small, going forward?
I would say it depends. I have been, as I told you, I've been studying this for a pretty long time, and I've been amazed at how well the model can work for a huge range of businesses, for-profit, not-for-profit. I've worked with Microsoft, one of the biggest companies in the world, but I've also worked with, solopreneur, consultants and small business owners, nail salons, restaurateurs and the like. It works for any organization where your customer has choices. In other words, you're not the only game in town. You don't have a patent. You don't have a geographic advantage, you're the only restaurant for 100 miles or something like that, and where you want to have an ongoing relationship with the customer. You want to see them more than once. So if you sell wedding dresses and that's all you sell, you may not care if the person never comes back, but if you sell dresses for special occasions, you probably do want to have people come back. So, thinking about these concepts might make sense for you. So really, it comes down to that. Do you have competitors? Does your customer have choice? And do you want to have an ongoing relationship with your customer? If the answer to both of those is yes, I would encourage you to think about participating in this membership economy.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. What are the latest industries that have adopted these types of business models? I know you've worked with the NBA and so forth. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. So the NBA had a business that kind of really grew up organically where, they film every game, but most of us are limited in which games we can see through broadcasting, through linear television, because somebody, one of the cable companies or your local carrier needs to have a relationship with the NBA for that particular set of shows, that particular set of games. So there were all these games. Like if you lived in, you know, California, but you followed a New York team, you might not get to see all the games. So they started to make it possible for fans to follow a particular team, regardless of where they were located, so that they could watch out-of-market games. And that became a business. So I worked with them to expand that and to integrate it into all of the other direct-to-consumer offerings that the NBA has. So it's kind of a fun example. But talking about trends, which mm-hmm. I know you asked, you know, I think of waves of industries that join the membership economy. So, you know, when I started, it was streaming content. It was video content, right? My first real client in this space was Netflix, mm-hmm. but also software. I'm in Silicon Valley, so I worked with Intuit, and I worked with, you know, as I said, Microsoft, and I worked with a lot of B2B software companies as well. Those were early adopters of subscription models. And, of course, print media has been, you know, with subscriptions forever, right? Print media, mm-hmm. Gyms, you know, fitness, country clubs, they've all, you know, associations, trade guilds, they've all been doing membership for a long time. More recently, we've seen consumer products, right? So you can subscribe to a subscription box, you know, that surprises and delights, and you can also subscribe and save on Amazon. So you can subscribe to toothpaste or, you know, sodas or whatever consumable product you don't ever want to run out of. So that's big in manufacturing and retail. And, you know, we're seeing it in automotives now. So you can subscribe to your car instead of owning the car outright. You can subscribe to features inside the car, like autonomous driving or, you know, OnStar security features or music through Sirius XM and the like. And then we're seeing it in healthcare, right? There's been, you know, during COVID, when a lot of us couldn't get into the doctors, you know, the laws changed. So now we can have a telehealth appointment with a doctor, which has opened up this whole new world. And there's all kinds of providers now that solve specific chronic issues for subscription or in a membership model. So, you know, that's coming, you know, to healthcare now. So I see healthcare, automotive, heavy equipment really now just starting, taking, you know, dipping their toe into the world of membership.
Are sponsors and advertisers sold on this business model?
Yeah. So what's interesting is subscription and membership is actually a way for companies to become less dependent on sponsors and advertisers, mm-hmm. right? So if you think about a newspaper, for example, mm-hmm. you know, for many newspapers, we are the, you know, we as readers are the, we're the product, right? And their customer is not, we're not the customer. The customer is the advertiser, right?
Right.
And the advertiser wants eyeballs, right? And so mm-hmm. the newspaper creates content that attracts the right eyeballs and then makes money from that by getting, you know, advertisers interested. So in that case, what the problem is that for me as a consumer, as a reader, you know, the reading content isn't really designed to be valuable for me. It's designed to be attractive to me. Right. So it's the difference between, you know, candy and a nutritious dinner. Right. So an article about Kim Kardashian might get a lot of eyeballs, but not
right.
that many people are going to pay for it because it's not that valuable. And so mm-hmm. when newspapers move to charging subscription and to focusing more heavily on subscription pricing, it also allows them to create content that might not appeal to everyone, but is very valuable for a smaller group. It allows them to go deep, do research. You know, an article about, you know, events in the bond market might not be, you know, interesting for everyone, but the people who it's interesting for are willing to pay a lot of money for it. So, you know, I think advertisers and sponsors are often nervous when a company moves to subscription because they're kind of closing out the advertiser and they're, you know, aligning more with the audience rather than mm-hmm. the advertiser. But the other side of it is we're seeing a lot of businesses that were never ads companies like Netflix mm-hmm. that are now introducing ads into the model to give them more flexibility. So they have a model where, you know, for one fee, you get no ads as a consumer. And then for a little less money, you have to put up with ads. One of the things that they've learned is that if you have subscription for a long time, you really learn what your consumers are willing to pay for, what content they care about, and who they are and what they care about, which actually makes them more attractive to the advertisers because they really know their audience well, and the audience is a very focused audience. So the company can actually provide insights to the advertisers to get the advertisers the results they really want. So I would summarize by saying, you know, early on when advertisers see companies moving towards subscription, they're afraid, right? They're losing the opportunity to advertise. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, it can lead to a much more valuable advertising product. Subscription can make the advertising space even more valuable.
Very interesting. And I'm so glad you covered the whole spectrum of it. You're right, because now it seems like the businesses will always be the bridge between advertisers and consumers. And for a long time, they were basically looking at advertisers and doing things to mirror what the advertisers want. And now that formula has changed.
Yeah, I mean, the old adage that, you know, if you're not paying, you're the product. Right. If
yeah.
you go to ladies' night
wow.
at a bar, right, you know, they
yeah.
used to have this old horrible model where ladies' night, it was free for women. You
right.
know why it was free for? Not because they love women and they care about them and they want to give them a gift. It's because women were the product. Like, come on, guy, you know, there's going to be lots of women here and we're going to give them free drinks. And so come on in, you know. Terrible.
That's a good
terrible.
Way of putting
like,
it.
Just keep your eyes open, right?
I love it. You're right. That's a form of advertising. It's not giving anything away. Everything has intentions to it.
Right. Just remember, if the product is free, you're the product. Remember that. Like, there is, you know, my mom taught me there's no such thing as a free lunch.
There you go. That's true. That's true. So, like, okay, where's the string?
There's always a string. There's always
there you
a
go.
String.
There you go. How should consumers shop for the best deals?
Yeah, so this is a great question, and it's one that mm-hmm. I'm increasingly being asked. You've alluded a couple times to subscription fatigue, that a lot of people are
yeah.
tired of getting so many subscriptions and having to keep track of them, and they don't
yeah.
really need them. And, you know, I subscribed to watch that one movie, and I forgot to cancel, and now I paid for 6 months. Right? I mean, we've all had
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
So here's what I'd advise is at least once a year, and preferably once a quarter, take 15 minutes and pull out, you know, look at your credit card statement and your, you know, there's this place inside either, you know, whether you're on Apple or
mm-hmm.
Android, you know, the App Store subscription area. And on Amazon, if you're an Amazon Prime subscriber, there's a place on Amazon that helps you keep track of any subscriptions you've bought through them. Those are kind of the big three places to look to make sure you know what subscriptions you're paying for. And if you're not using something, cancel. If there's a subscription that you're paying for where they have a number to call, and these are usually subscriptions where there's a lot of promotions attached to it, so like newspapers, magazines, your telco, here's like some, anything that you probably got on a big promotion where the price was really low and then it went high, call them and ask them for a better price. You know, you don't need to negotiate. You don't need to argue. You don't need to be clever. Just say, hey, I'm wondering if you have a better price. I've been a subscriber for however long.
Mm-hmm.
The price feels high to me. Can you do any better? And a lot of them will just give you a better price right there on the phone. So it's worth it to do that at least once a year. You know, cancel the ones that you're not using. Ask for a discount on the ones where you can ask. And when it's time to pick something new, I would encourage you to shop around, so, you know, see what the other alternatives are. Subscriptions offer a free trial. So mark the date in your calendar. Use the free trial right away and see if you're going to like it. And mark the date in your calendar when you want to cancel by so that you don't forget, right? And,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's some wonder. I build subscription business models, right? I work with companies. I love subscriptions. There's tremendous value. It's almost always cheaper than paying as you go. So if you know you're going to use the product on a regular basis, why wouldn't you subscribe? And on top of that, there's often, you know, really great benefits integrated into that subscription beyond just discounted pricing. So for the right people, it's a great model. But for a lot of us, we're just paying too much for subscriptions that we don't use.
Right, right. And then you tend to forget about it, and that's where the attitude shifts.
Well, where, yeah, because you feel yeah. so stupid, right? You forgot.
So true, so true. You mentioned before that these models work for nonprofits. Can you dive into it a little bit deeper? Because nonprofits are obviously different, I would think, than businesses.
Yeah, I mean, so the main differences between between nonprofit and for-profit when it comes to mm-hmm. subscriptions, most nonprofits actually have a forever promise already, right? What it is that they're trying to accomplish and who they're doing it for. So that's a big advantage. You know, a lot of companies don't have a forever promise. They're like, well, I sell clothes. I don't have a promise, right? What's mm-hmm. my promise? You'll look great? I don't know. That you'll look great at a cheap price? but most nonprofits are mission-driven, so you can tie to that. And I think that then what you want to think about is what brings people to me and what is the promise I'm making? So for example, at a minimum, let's say that you run a nonprofit, Save the Whales. Right. So like mm-hmm. if I believe in saving the whales, like I don't want a free whale. Right. I don't want to own a whale. Like that's not why I'm doing it. I'm doing it because I believe in the cause. Right. The last thing I need is a whale in my little house. But I want to feel good about it. That is one piece of value is like you can subscribe and for $100 a year, we'll let you know all the impact that you're having and what we're working on and you'll be an insider. They can also layer in other things because I might also be giving money to Save the Whales because I'm an environmentalist and I would like to meet other environmentalists. Maybe I'd like to meet an environmentalist to have a romantic relationship with because those are my people, right? So bringing like-minded people together is another place to add value in that forever promise. Maybe I'm a member because I'm interested. Maybe I'm a biologist and I'm interested in whales, so I want to know what they're learning about whales. So incorporating, you know, learning events is another layer of value that you can put in. And understanding that different members are coming for different reasons. So, for example, I'm a member of an art museum here in California that I actually go to a lot, right? And I get free admission. So, you know, whether or not I even care about the museum, I'm getting great value because I like to go there and I go there, you know, I pay $50 and I get to go for free, included, right? That's value. I'm also a member of the African American Museum in the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C. I've been there twice in the last 6 years. Right? I've been a member since they opened. Why am I a member? Because I believe in their cause and because I like to learn. But I'm not a member for free stuff, right? So if you're a nonprofit, you want to think about why are people members and what value can we provide to help them on their, what is their journey? Why do they give money to us in the first place? And how can we layer in more value? With the museums, another reason people join museums, which is not necessarily related to their mission, is I want my kids to be cultured. And so I join the museum so that my kids can learn about art and be, you know, more intellectual, more cultured, more aware. So then you might incorporate, if you know that that's what your members are coming for, you might incorporate children's or family events. So with any membership, with any subscription, you want to layer in benefits that maximize the likelihood of someone achieving their goals that brought them to you in the first place. The only difference with nonprofits, I think, is that sometimes people give money on a regular basis simply because of the mission without getting any tangible benefits themselves.
Right.
But it's all the same concept. It's the same steps to build it out.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. That's really wonderful. You mentioned just now about basically in a nutshell, the downside for consumers about the business model. Is there a downside to the membership and subscription model for businesses?
Great question. I think there's lots of downsides, right? So first of all, if you can't deliver on your forever promise, people are going to cancel. So let's say that I promise you that you're – I had a client like this. Let's say that you are an educational company and you have a series of courses and you're currently selling those courses. You have three courses and each course costs $1,000, right? And you say as a member, You get access to all of our courses, as well as to our library of videos and webinars and our annual meeting, right? And let's say that you join, and it's $100 a month, right? Remember the course. Let's say it's $500 a month. You join for $500, and in the first month, you complete all three courses, right? That's $3,000 worth of value. You've binged the value. Mm-hmm. Now, you've taken your $3,000 customer and turned them into a $500 customer, right? You've lost money after spending all of this effort to build out a subscription offering, and now you lose money. This happens all the time, right? You make it a subscription. The subscription really only has a positive ROI if the person stays, let's say, for 6 months, and they only stay for 1 month or 3 months or 5 months, and you lose money on every customer. This happened, you know, with I worked with Electronic Arts, is a video game company. Games cost between 60, you know, let's call it $60 to buy a game outright. Their subscription, which had unlimited access to lots of games, was $100 a year, right? So for somebody who buys one game a year, they would make more money if you subscribe for a year. But for somebody who buys two games a year, if that person no longer buys those two games and just pays $100, you're losing money on them, right? Because they used to pay $120, now they're only paying $100 a year. So some of the big questions that we had to consider is, how many people are there like that who are buying two or more games? What is the likelihood of them signing up for the subscription? If they sign up for the subscription, will they continue to also buy games, or will it replace their game purchases? So you really need to understand some of those things before you go into subscription, understand how people are going to behave, and then price it properly. So there's a lot of risk associated with it, and if you don't think through that risk, you know, you might end up damaging a successful business. And I think the other thing that, you know, you might think about is, if you're trying to build a subscription that has no value, which a lot of companies do, throwing together some features that you have, and, you know, we have some old towels, we'll give everybody a free towel if they join. People don't want the towels, right? They cancel, and you've done all this work, and you don't have any members. So, you know, it can be dangerous when you have too many members who used to pay you more, and you've lost all this value, or when you spend all this money to build out a subscription and nobody signs up. So those are sort of two worst cases that can happen if you launch a subscription.
Very, very interesting. These are the things, again, it's things that are we focus on the money side of the equation, or are we focused on the people? Because you said something that's very important just now. You said that I'm selling something that I don't have. There's no value to it. Because I'm looking at the front.
People sign up for something because the promise is there. You know, the promise is a good promise. You know, sign up with us and get beautiful clothes. This happens with, you know, these clothing, basically clothing rental subscriptions, right, where you get a box of six items and they say, you're going to get beautiful clothes that look great on you. And you're like, they're ugly. I don't like these clothes. Or, you know, sign up for a makeup subscription where you get surprise and delight with new makeup every month. And you're like, this makeup is cheap. It looks terrible. It is making my skin break out. I'm going to cancel. They keep sending me the same product, so I'm not actually getting surprised and delighted because they only have a limited number. There's only so many lipsticks out there, and I've tried them all, and now I'm done. So you have to think hard about what is your forever promise. You know, subscribe with me, and I'll take care of you forever. I'll deliver on this promise forever. Can you really deliver on it, and do people care? And you have to know that both of the answers to those are yes. And then you also need to think about if there's going to be any cannibalization in your business model.
Very interesting. Do you have any predictions regarding what we can expect in the coming years regarding membership and subscription business model?
Yeah, so it's not going away. That would be the first thing that I'd say. It's part of the new normal. It's part of how it's one of the tools in any business owner or business executive's toolkit. Everybody should consider whether it makes sense for their business and under what circumstances. But I think people are getting savvier about it, more sophisticated. It's not the only tool. It's not every business should only have subscriptions. There are many pricing tactics. And if you have a member mindset, you have to recognize that not everybody wants a contractual, consistent, drumbeat kind of relationship, right? For example, back to this, you know, company that has six courses, maybe, you know, I only want to take courses when I'm between jobs, when I have a lot of free time, and I'm trying to add to my toolbox, right? But when I'm working in a job, I don't need to be a member because I don't have time to take courses, right? So offering your courses only as a subscription really doesn't align with the customer need. So what I think is coming in the future is an increasing variety of pricing structures so that each consumer can get exactly what they need. So there's, in addition to, you know, transactional purchases and ownership, right? I buy the book and I own the book.
Right.
I buy the music and I own the music. I can subscribe to it. I can pay as I go. That is, every time I listen to the song, I might pay a few cents, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can, you know, bundle things together with different companies. There's a lot of different ways to charge for value. And the important thing is to bundle the right benefits for that particular customer's needs.
Right. So true. That's very true. Where can someone go to buy your books, get more information about your services, listen to your Subscription Stories podcast, and keep up with your latest happenings?
RobbieKelmanBaxter.com has my books, has a lot of content, and some free stuff about how to you know, launch your own subscription, and how to improve the subscriptions you already have. Lots of information there. And then follow me on LinkedIn. I, as you mentioned so kindly, I have a whole bunch of LinkedIn learning courses. And if somebody DMs me on LinkedIn and asks for a specific course, I'm glad to, I can unlock it for your listeners so that they can access the course for a 24-hour period. So they're 45-minute courses. So, you know, a 24 hours should be plenty of time for a free tour of any of those courses.
Fantastic. What is next for you?
You know, I continue to be amazed at the ways that subscription pricing evolves and the way that organizations are adopting member mindset. I'm working with a really interesting variety of companies, and this is conference season. So, you know, I was in Nashville last week. I was in New York the week before. I'm going to London next week. So that's kind of what my life is looking like right now. Lots of speaking in the spring.
Hey, you should make a subscription for you.
Love it.
See, and then that way, oh, it depends on what you need. You see, there you go.
yeah, love it.
As we're coming close to the end of the hour, since our show is about people, family, and living life, would you like to share a recipe for living with our listeners this morning?
Yes. My recipe for living is to think of your life as a portfolio, the activities in your life, just the same way that you would have a portfolio of investments. And sometimes, you know, it's appropriate to invest in risky things that have a long-term payoff. And sometimes it's better to have, you know, less risky things where you can get your money out quickly. When you're thinking about your life, think about how you invest your time. And think about what it is that you need to take out right now. So if you need more learning, invest in spending your time in classes and reading. If you need more money, invest your time in, you know, gainful employment. If you need more connection, you know, join a club, you know, work in an office rather than working at home. There's so many different ways to build a life that works for you. So, you know, be creative and be flexible about the things you need and the things you want and the ways you can get them from many different kinds of pursuits at the same time.
Wonderful. Robbie, thank you for a wonderful recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, please join me in 2 weeks, Wednesday morning, April 17 at 10 a.m. Central Time, U.S. My guest will be Amy Newmark, the Publishing Editor-in-Chief for Chicken Soup for the Soul. Amy and I will be having a conversation about their latest Chicken Soup for the Soul, Me and My Cat, 101 Tales of Feline Friendship. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to FromMyMamasKitchenTalkRadio.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Robbie, it's been a true pleasure. Thank you again, and have a blessed day.
Thanks so much, Johnny. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you. Bye-bye.